This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. During the bruising battle over Iraq at the United Nations, President Bush, among others, criticized the world body as inefficient, ineffective, indecisive, and unresponsive to the challenges of the 21st century. Afterwards, Secretary General Kofi Annan commissioned a panel of influential international figures to consider reform. Their report, all 100 or so pages of it, landed on the Secretary's General's desk this morning. It proposes the most far-reaching changes since the creation of the UN 60 years ago, including a younger and trimmer bureaucracy, elimination of outdated institutions such as the Trusteeship Council, and most controversially, an expanded Security Council. Today we'll fill you in on some of the key proposals and we'll get reaction from representatives of Germany and Japan. Later in the program, the FDA considers approval of a hormone patch that some are calling female Viagra, but first, reform at the UN. If you have questions about what's in today's report or how changes might affect the UN, the U.S., or other countries, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from London is Diana Geddes. She covers the UN for The Economist magazine and has, Diana, as I understand it, you've been going over this report with a fine-tooth comb.
Tried to.
Now, we're going to get to the Security Council proposals in just a minute, but tell us, what else is in this report?
I think the main thing for me is the way the report brings together the various kinds of threats facing the world. It isn't just international terrorism, which is what the West mainly is minds about and is has its focus on, but if one's going to be very blunt about it, international terrorism kills a few thousand people a year, bad enough. But then when you look at other threats, like the number that are killed in civil wars, or the number that are killed from infectious diseases like AIDS or TB or those kind of diseases, or the number that die from hunger, or the number that die from, as I said, civil wars, from drought and those kind of things.
And genocide to boot, yes.
We're talking there about millions, not just thousands. So I think one of the things this report does is to say, look, all these threats need to be addressed and they are all interrelated. Where you've got poverty, where you've got disease, where you've got civil war, where you've got hunger, you then have much more likely to have a failed state. And where you've got a failed state, there's a breeding ground for terrorism. So this is something that we need to look at as a whole, not just to be nice in quotes to developing countries who obviously mind more about these things because they don't have the same threat from international terrorism as the West does at the moment, but also because it's in our own Western interest that we look at that. The second point that I think that, and if the Commission calls it sort of variously a witch's brew or a nightmare scenario of this interconnection of these various economic, social and security threats, the second thing it addresses is the whole question of unilateral, multilateral, or what they, as they prefer to call it, collective action vis-a-vis the use of force in the world. As I'm sure everyone knows that under the existing charter, there are two kinds of situations in which the use of force is legal under an international law. One is under the so-called Article 51, self-defense provisions, where there a country can say, look, somebody's attacked me or I'm under imminent threat, and then that country is allowed to act on its own without going to the Security Council. For all other types of threat, the countries or the group of countries or an individual country needs the sanction of the Security Council. Now, the panel looked at this and said, should we expand the ability of countries or groups of countries to go it alone without going to the Security Council? And they said, no, we don't need to do that because the Security Council already has the adequate means to act if it wants to. What is required is not changes to the UN Charter, but the political will to intervene. There is also, I mean, the United States might well say, but, you know, the Security Council has been paralyzed so often by the veto of one of its permanent members. That was true, particularly during the Cold War era, but since 19...
As recently as Kosovo.
As recently as Kosovo, you're absolutely right. And this is something that the panel would like to address. But one of the things it says and its suggestions is some kind of voluntary restraint on the use of vetoes. It feels that it cannot say, let's scrap the whole veto system. For a start, America would never accept it, let alone the other four who have less strength than America. So they're suggesting a voluntary restraint system whereby the countries that have the veto, the permanent five, would only use it where their vital interests are truly at stake, which wouldn't have applied to Kosovo, and also to abstain in situations of genocide or other gross atrocities or violations of human rights, which gets onto the second very important point that in the panel's recommendations. They suggest a new responsibility to protect, which they say should override the principle, the very basic principle of non-intervention in the internal affairs of sovereign countries. That principle stands, but they say when the country concerned, where there are these gross violations of civil rights are going on, when that country abdicates its own responsibilities because it's unwilling or unable to carry them out, then the international community, read the UN, should intervene and take over this responsibility to protect, initially perhaps by sending in aid, but ultimately, as a last resource, by force.
I just need to interrupt because joining us now is one of the 16 eminent persons, as the UN designated them, that were appointed to this panel that came up with these proposals. And with us now on the phone from London is Lord Hannay, a former British ambassador to the United Nations. David Hannay, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, very nice to talk to you.
What was it like to be on this panel with 15 other influential people, many of whom I gather you'd never met before?
Well, I met about half of them, I think, before, and half I hadn't, but we had some very interesting times together, 6 3-day meetings and a lot of seminars and outreach meetings, too. So we got to know each other pretty well, and I hope you will think that we managed to pull together a pretty meaty and important report. Certainly, I think the most substantial makeover proposed for the UN since it was set up in 1945.
Obviously, there were disagreement. Must have been disagreement on any number of issues.
There were lots of disagreements. Well, there were lots of differences of perception and approach, but we managed to reconcile them, and the report represents our common view. Of course, those differences of opinion still exist. But the report is the report of all 16 of us.
The idea for an expanded Security Council, there are in fact two proposals, that might suggest that was a pretty thorny problem.
Yes, it was, and we also concluded after a lot of discussion that it wasn't particularly helpful to put forward one proposal, particularly if it didn't have the full support of the panel, because ultimately it's the member states who are going to take that decision, and we felt we'd clarified the situation enough by setting out the criteria for enlarging the council and setting out two models, either of which fulfill those criteria.
As you look at it, what is the most important thing that reform needs to address? Is it institutional changes within the world body itself, or the idea that the UN has to, from time to time, change over to reflect changing times?
No, I think the most important thing is that it changes policies and changes the institutions insofar as that is necessary to implement the policies it's decided. It needs to be tougher on terrorism. It needs to be more effective against proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. It needs to prevent states failing. It needs to get to grips with world poverty, the environment, and pandemic diseases. It's got to deal more effectively than it has in the past with organized crime. Now, it's policies you need to do that, and decisions by the collective world community. But you also need institutions to run all that. So we've proposed, for example, that the Security Council should set up a peace-building commission, which would follow the whole continuum of a state that is under stress from early warning through non-military measures to prevent it failing, through, as a last resort, intervention, and then, of course, post-conflict peace building on a much more sustained way than it's done before. And we think if all that is done by a single body, which would also have representation on it of the World Bank and the IMF and regional bodies and so on, this might produce a more coherent and more consistent response to the modern phenomenon of failed states, which is one of the really serious threats to world peace and stability.
David Hannay, I know you have to run, and we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Lord Hannay was one of the panel members commissioned by Kofi Annan to develop reform proposals for the United Nations, and he joined us from the House of Lords in London. Diana Geddes is still with us from The Economist magazine, also in London. And as you listen to what Lord Hannay had to say, he seemed to pretty well agree with your ideas about the thrust of this report.
I think that's right, but what neither of us have yet said is how it's going to be implemented. And this is, obviously, the very big question mark. It's all very well to say we need a new peace-building commission and we need to allow a responsibility to protect and all the rest of it, but how are we going to achieve that? Mm-hmm. One of the things that struck me in reading the report, as opposed to hearing about it from various people beforehand, is actually how few of the recommendations, indeed there's only one really important recommendation that requires an amendment of the Charter, and that is the expansion of the Security Council.
And that's a very important point to make, because revising the Charter requires all the member states to ratify it.
Well, not all. It requires a two-thirds majority of the General Assembly, which is all the member states, and then by the two-thirds of the governments of the countries to ratify it. It also requires no veto by any of the permanent five. So that's a pretty tall order to overcome. So in a way, it's very lucky that that's the only one. But other proposals require a simple vote by the Security Council. Now you might say, well, that's easy enough. You can have a vote. There are only 15 of them at the moment. But there again, you've got the possibility of a veto, including that of the United States, who is the most critical of the member states against the UN itself at the moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, generally the feeling is at the moment that it's a, you know, even the kindest people think that it's deeply flawed, that they condemn its bureaucratic slowness and its inefficiency and its alleged anti-Israeli bent. And some of those criticisms are taken up in by the panel, and they agree with a lot of them. What bothers me is that many of the recommendations, they say, simply requires changes of heart, greater political will on the parts of governments. The tools are there. All we need to do is to use them. That we need to sign up to these various conventions on chemical weapons, on biological warfare. The trouble is that if we haven't done it now, why are we going to do it in the future? And this is something that really troubles me. I mean, I think it is a very good report. The recommendations are not earth-shattering, and therefore they are all the more commendable, because you don't want earth-shattering recommendations. They start from the view that the UN is worthwhile keeping, but let's reform it. But it's going to be very difficult to do.
Hang in there with us. When we come back from a short break, we'll be joined by representatives of two countries who could be members of the Security Council on a more permanent basis, depending on which reform, if any, is adopted. We'll get their reaction to these proposals, and we'll take your calls. 800-989-8255. Email is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing a new report that calls for changes in both the structure and the culture at the United Nations. If you have questions about the proposals in the report, you can call us at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. With us from London is Diana Geddes of The Economist magazine, who covers the United Nations for them. And let's get a caller on the line. Saeed is with us from Sunnyvale, California.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I had one comment, because you already kind of talked about it, and then a question. And the comment was just on the whole concept of the veto, and I understand the issues about not getting rid of it, but it's probably the single most undemocratic thing that you could imagine in the UN, where these small group of countries actually have control over any decision that goes up against the Security Council. And I doubt any country like the United States would say, oh yeah, we'll give Texas and California veto power over any law that we want to pass. So it's just something that probably really needs to be reformed. Otherwise, you're always going to get this bias at that level. Mm-hmm. So that was just a comment I wanted to make. And the question was, I don't know if you talked about it, but is there any plan to give the General Assembly more power and authority? Because right now, their resolutions are completely non-binding, and in effect, they seem to be a non-entity in any kind of world affairs. It's really just the Security Council and Security Council alone.
Diana Geddes, what does the report say about the General Assembly?
It doesn't say too much, but for reading between the lines, I think they reckon that the General Assembly is a bit of a lost cause. They are very critical of it, about its inability to focus on real issues, about it, the repetitive nature of its resolutions. I think the problem with the General Assembly is precisely its democratic nature, that you've got nations of literally a few tens of thousands of people, and you've got other nations of over a billion, but that each of their votes counts the same. It tends to be dominated by small developing nations that have their own agenda. I think it's a useful place, as one UN diplomat put it to me rather unkindly, that it's a useful group therapy session. But I'm struck that the panel has no recommendations on increasing its powers or authority in any way at all.
Saeed, thanks very much.
Thank you.
As we mentioned, among the recommendations in today's report is restructuring of the Security Council. The Council's current makeup is 5 permanent countries with veto power: the United States, Britain, France, Russia, and China. And there are 10 other members elected by the General Assembly for 2-year terms. The permanent members have a veto. That composition is viewed as out of date with today's geopolitical realities. In this segment, we're going to be speaking with representatives from 2 countries who have hopes of joining the Security Council on a more or less permanent basis, should its makeup be revamped. Joining us now from his office is Peter Gottwald, the Deputy Chief of Mission at the German Embassy here in Washington, D.C., and it's good of you to be with us today.
Hello, Neil. Thank you for having me.
Germany is considered among the countries with a strong possibility to join the Council should its membership be expanded. Should Germany be a member, and should it be a member if there's no veto associated with that membership?
Neil, let me start by stressing that Germany's ultimate goal is the reform of the United Nations system, and we just heard quite a bit about that, and I think the title of the report is very appropriate, saying a more secure world, our shared responsibility. And Germany is obviously sharing this responsibility, and we are willing and, I believe, also able to do more than we have done so far.
And what about the proposal of Germany being on the Security Council?
Well, as you know, Germany has been a non-permanent member for the last 2 years. We believe we have played a constructive role. We have tried to help to work on trying to get a grip on the various crisis areas in Africa, Afghanistan, the Middle East, the Balkans, and so on. And we are obviously also one of the bigger, let's say, contributors to the United Nations. And so we feel that we should indeed contribute in many ways to the Security Council. And that is why we have put in our serious interest of becoming a member.
Mm-hmm. And if there is a revised Security Council, should there be vetoes for the Perm 5? Should there be vetoes for all permanent members? Should there be no veto?
Well, it seems to me that the veto is one of the basic construction elements of the United Nations Charter, and of course you could discuss its wisdom, but it is part of the system, and I think nobody seriously thinks of changing that. So I guess if we are talking about permanent members, all permanent members ideally should be in the same situation.
All permanent members then having a veto.
That would be the ideal world, yeah.
As you look at some of the other proposed reforms, many of them can be can be accomplished with the stroke of the Secretary General's pen. What do you think of the report in general?
Well, I think it is a very thoughtful and very comprehensive collection of the burning issues which we are having, and I think we all agree it is necessary to reform the United Nations. The Secretary General, in his foreword, has endorsed this core argument, and we obviously are faced with a different world today from the one in 1945. Many of the threats, and Diana has mentioned that, are today non-state threats like AIDS, terrorism, failing states, so there is a need to act on it, and I think the report contains very serious and very worthwhile recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a caller on the line, and Jonathan joins us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Hello.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hello. Pleasure to be here. My question, now that Germany just came up, is whether or not there was any talk in the report about consolidating the EU, maybe not just giving it one vote, or possibly maybe having the EU rather than just France having a veto vote or something like that, or any address, any issue being addressed that way.
Britain, of course, is also a member of the EU and also has a veto. But Mr. Godwald?
Yes, I'd like to answer to that, that obviously a European seat on the Security Council would be our long-term goal. But if you look at a realistic appraisal of the current situation, it is quite clear that there is no chance of success for that at this point. And that is why we believe that we need to tackle the problems as they pose themselves, and that is something where we feel that we can contribute to making the Security Council a more effective, more representative body. And obviously this is not a proposal dealing with Germany, but with other important countries like India, Brazil, Japan, and African countries.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, thank you.
Thank you.
And before we let you go, Mr. Godwald, I did want to ask if there was, the Security Council aside, if there was one other reform proposal that you've looked at that you would say it would increase efficiency of the United Nations.
Well, obviously, we have talked about the General Assembly. We have talked, not yet, but the report does talk about ECOSOC, the Economic and Social Council, and there is also a very serious consideration of the future system of dealing with human rights in the United Nations. These are areas which deserve very much attention, and I believe that we really need to tackle those challenges, both the ones of the poorer countries of the world and the ones of human rights, and that is the spirit in which we are trying to contribute to the reform of the United Nations.
Peter Godwald, thank you very much for being with us today. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Peter Godwald, Deputy Chief of Mission of the German Embassy, spoke to us from his office here in Washington. Diana Geddes there in London, I did want to ask you also about the Human Rights Commission. The report did address that.
Absolutely, and quite rightly. And it's quite a scandal at the moment what goes on the Commission on Human Rights, and America's criticism of the UN for that is absolutely justified. And you get countries that have some of the worst possible human rights records, and countries like Sudan that are members of this commission. And as the panel says, you can't have these kind of double standards and countries setting themselves up to tell other countries what their human rights should be when they themselves are allowing gross violations of human rights in their own countries. The panel, I think, well, I suppose they had a big discussion over this, because they've ended, from my point of view, by a bit ducking the whole issue by saying, look, the whole problem of who is violating what kind of human rights is impossible. One lot of one country will say, no, these aren't human rights. This is terrorism, internal terrorism. We've got to cope with it. And another one will say that's not right. And their recommendation, therefore, is effectively, to my mind, to abolish the commission, because what they say is that instead of having a membership of the commission, that you should expand this to everybody. So, I mean, you effectively say, you know, 191 members on this commission, but...
Committee of the whole, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, they then come in the back door and say, yes, but we would also like then to set up an advisory council to the commission of 15 human rights experts. So these will no longer be simply political representatives of these their governments. They will still be representing their countries, but they will be experts, in renowned experts, in the field of human rights. And the panel also says that it would like eventually to see such an advisory council, or indeed it talks about the commission, I'm sorry, I should have said that, but I think they're meaning the advisory council, upgraded so as to be on a level, on a par with the Security Council for security matters, with the Economic and Social Council for economic and social matters, and then you have the Human Rights Council. So clearly they think that this is incredibly important, but they also know that it's highly sensitive, and I think it'll take quite a long time to make that change.
Joining us now is a representative from another country that aspires to a seat at the Security Council table. Katsuro Nagai is a deputy press secretary at the Japanese embassy, also here in Washington, and thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
I wonder, what's your reaction to the suggestions of an expanded membership in the Security Council? Do you think Japan should be considered, as many people do, for membership in an expanded Security Council? And again, the question of, if so, should it have a veto?
Okay. First of all, that the we welcome the report that emphasizes that the Security Council needs to be expanded. We have many reasons that we need to expand the Security Council. The Security Council must be more representative to affect more members today's world and better affect today's world. And also, must be legitimate and effective to deal with, tackle with all the new challenges that the founders of the United Nations could not have envisioned, so, all the issues that they've been listed in the previous speakers. And in this sense, Japan has been working pretty effectively in this regard of the all those issues in the United Nations. And Japan is resolved to assume further responsibility as a permanent member of the Council, as our Prime Minister Koizumi stated in the General Assembly.
And again, the question of the veto?
Yes, of course. That the we have been specifically mentioned all those possible new and old Security Council members should have the same status in terms of vetoes.
A permanent member is a permanent member.
And I think that we take into account seriously about the proposal that new Security Council members should not have a veto.
Now, as Japan is one of the certainly in terms of per capita, one of the principal contributors to the United Nations, to keeping its operations going. As you look at the reforms proposed, do you think that they would make better use of Japan's money?
Of course, it is something that we need to discuss further with, among, with the member states as to how we should implement or how should to take those recommendations into account. But of course, that the we like to take the as good elements as possible to reform the United States, United Nations, in particular, the reform of the Security Council.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Katsuro Nagai, Deputy Press Secretary at the Japanese Embassy here in Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Diana Geddes, I wanted to ask you a bit about the timetable involved in this. We've all seen many worthy reports and suggestions for reforms at any number of international institutions that are debated and discussed and then tucked away on a dusty shelf.
Indeed. The timetable is as follows. It's been presented to the Secretary-General, Kofi Annan. It's now today been distributed to all the member states. And there will be a period, obviously, of people talking about it, reading it, consulting, etc. Kofi Annan will give his own detailed reaction to the report, probably in his own report to members that will be published in March, as I understand it. It will be a report not only on this high panel on new challenges and threats, but it will also be on the so-called Millennium Goals dealing with that were set up in 2000, agreed on in 2000, calling for example, the halving of poverty and disease by the year 2015. And it'll be a progress report on that, which will incorporate his reaction to this latest report. He will then travel the world, if he hasn't already done so, discussing all of this with heads of government and heads of state, trying to convince them the panel's obviously hoping that he will take on board all their recommendations, but he said the report goes beyond even his expectations. He's been very complimentary about it without dealing with detailed recommendations. He specifically hasn't made any comment on the expansion of the Security Council other than to say that, yes, he does feel that it needs to be more representative. Once his March report and reactions to this panel's report is put out, it will then, as I say, various governments will comment on it, and it will be discussed by a summit meeting of the heads of state and government, a very special summit meeting that is to be held at the UN headquarters in New York just before the normal General Assembly meeting in September. Mm-hmm. And from then on, it can be discussed. But just to say, as a matter of timetable, there is a suggestion that both Kofi Annan and the aspirant new permanent members of the Security Council would like to get away before all of this, before the September discussions, would like to get away the whole question of Security Council reform, because it's such a thorny problem. And there is a suggestion that the so-called aspirant four, the ones that feel they've got a good chance, namely Germany, Japan, Brazil and India, possibly taking on board also an African state, which the panel has suggested there should be two countries from Africa, and that's generally thought likely to be Egypt as the first Arab representative on the permanent member on the Security Council, and probably South Africa, but possibly Nigeria as another African state. If they can get together and present themselves, which is the plan at the moment of the, as I say, of the so-called aspirant four, mm-hmm. present a resolution to the General Assembly, they think they might have enough, soon after Annan's report in March, they feel they might have enough support to get the two-thirds majority necessary and can then get that out of the way.
Diana Geddes, thanks so much for taking the time there on this evening in London to speak with us.
Thanks very much.
Diana Geddes is the United Nations correspondent for The Economist magazine and joined us from their offices in London. When we get back from a short break, the Food and Drug Administration is considering a new patch that might boost female sexual desire. We'll be talking about that after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.